America is predicated on the notion of God-given rights. America's founders said that they expected the people needed to be virtuous for the Constitution to work. They also said that religion, by which they meant Christianity, was the primary means to sustain virtue among the people. And of course, this was always to be at a voluntary basis. Fast forward to the 20th century, where we saw the rise of many isms that are at war with the laws of nature and of nature's God. One of the most evil of these, of course, was Hitler and the Nazis. Of all the isms, one of the greatest modern scholars on Hitler and the Nazis is Dr. Richard Weikart, a semi-retired history professor in a California university. He's also the author of several books, including From Darwin to Hitler and Hitler's Religion. I'm Jerry Newcomb. This is Vocal Points, and we welcome Dr. Richard Weikart back to the program. Dr. Weikart, it's always a pleasure to talk with you.
Yeah, it's great to be with you today.
Germany was the country that produced at one time Martin Luther, Johann Sebastian Bach, Ludwig von Beethoven. How did they go from that to Adolf Hitler, Joseph Goebbels, and Heinrich Himmler?
Well, it didn't happen overnight. If you look at the history of German thought in the 18th and on in the 19th century, there was a lot of Enlightenment rationalism that took hold by the late 18th century. That was the idea that God didn't intervene in nature, that there was no such thing as miracles, that Jesus was not the Son of God, that he was just a good moral teacher or something like that. And that was taking root in the late 18th century in Germany. Then by the time you come to the 19th century, theological liberalism was going to hold sway.
Can I stop you for one second?
Some of the same kind of things.
Let me just stop you real fast, because you were just referring to the 1700s a moment ago, late 1700s. At the same time that that was happening, America was experiencing its revolution, and a lot of people like to say, well, the founding fathers, you know, drew from the Enlightenment thinkers. What they don't clarify, and this is a critical point, is that the type of thinkers in that category, if you want to put them in that category, that the founders appreciated and followed and quoted were people like Montesquieu, Sir William Blackstone, and John Locke, men who believed, professed to believe in Christianity. And in fact, John Locke even wrote the book, The Reasonableness of Christianity. Whereas the founders that you're, or the Enlightenment type thinkers that you're talking about in Germany in the late 1700s, no, these are anti-God ones, certainly not ones that were pro-Christian. Okay, go ahead and wax eloquent, or unless, if you want to add anything to that.
Yeah, many of them actually did believe in God, like Immanuel Kant, for example, but they didn't believe in the God of Christianity. They didn't believe in the Christian God. And because of that, ultimately, especially over the course of the 19th century, as Germany became infested with theological liberalism in the religious sphere, also a very strong and powerful intellectual movement in the 19th century is known as historicism, which is the idea that everything is in historical flux. And Hegel was one of the key figures here in Germany to introduce that idea that caught on, not just in philosophy, but in many fields, that everything's in historical flux. And that means that there is no basis for any kind of fixed human rights. You talked earlier about human rights enshrined in the Declaration of Independence, for example. Hegel and his historicism and many of the German philosophers and theologians and social thinkers after that time thought that everything's in flux, including morality, that morality is not something fixed for all time, but it's something that changes over time.
Okay, and so just think about this. Here, George Washington says, you know, our Constitution, or I'm sorry, this is a John Adams quote, our Constitution was made only for a moral and religious people. It is wholly inadequate to the government of any other. Okay, I'll stop interrupting you, but I like this contrast because I you know, in effect, by the time you get to Hitler, you've got a witch's brew of bad ideas, you know, and there's anti-Semitism, of course, in that mix.
Yeah, and the moral relativism that I just described through the avenue of historicism was a very powerful factor in leading people away from Judeo-Christian morality and opening up possibilities of killing people for various and sundry reasons. And it wasn't just in Germany, but it was in other countries as well. I think of Jeremy Bentham, for example, the British utilitarian thinker who was one of the more famous philosophers, moral philosophers of the late 18th and on to the early 19th centuries. He thought it was okay to kill babies because they couldn't feel any pain or wouldn't know what was happening to them. And so this notion that you could kill people, it was just there's no moral absolutes any longer. It's morally relative. So, Hitler had particular categories of people that he killed that were based on other kinds of ideas that are going to come down through the German thinking. But the idea that opened up these possibilities was this historicism that relativized morality, essentially. And this was going to become a very powerful current by the late 19th century. And one of the factors that I discuss quite extensively in my research is the role of Darwinism also in all of this. Because Darwin also believed in moral relativism because he thought that morality was just an evolved trait. And so he thought that it was something that could be different from species to species, different from race to race within the human species, and of course ultimately could be different from one human being to the other. Your own instincts told you. So if Hitler's instincts tell him, I need to get rid of the Jews, Darwin doesn't have an answer to that. I mean, Darwin didn't approve of that. I'm not blaming Darwin or the Holocaust directly here. But Darwin didn't have an answer for that, and nor do modern-day Darwinists. There's a very prominent secular thinker named Yuval Noah Harari, who wrote a book called Sapiens, a best-selling book called Sapiens, Humankind. And in his book, he specifically says that Darwinism undermines the Declaration of Independence's claims about us being created by God and being given inalienable rights. He says there are no inalienable rights because the biological processes are just random that have used us. So Darwinism was also a very powerful factor, and Darwinism caught on in Germany in a very big way. And Hitler was very – I've written several books dealing with Hitler's own ideology and how it was inspired in many respects by Darwinism and the racism that came from Darwin.
And I understand that also in the seminaries in Germany, there was a lot of poison there in terms of, in effect, what they did was they applied these same kind of bad ideas that you're talking about, moral relativism, there is no fix. Ultimately, you're saying there is no revelation from God. They applied those things to the Bible, and so outwardly you might have pastors and bishops and so forth, but they don't really believe in Jesus and Christianity. So it's like, wow, what
exactly
is this?
Well, since they didn't believe in the Bible as being divinely inspired, they believed it was historically developing, that it had historically developed over time. I mean, they thought that Moses, the things that Moses had written were basically primitive, and that things had changed over time and become more and more developed. And they thought that Jesus was a higher emanation of the religious ideas, but then they thought it still developed even after Jesus too. And so it keeps developing. Religion just keeps developing and changing over time. It's not any kind of fixed ideas there. So they didn't have anything fixed to fasten themselves on. And so what happened was they just accepted whatever was the fashionable ideas of their day. And so if Darwinism is fashionable among scientists, then the liberal theologians ate it up and tried to incorporate it into their thinking as well. And so a lot of these different kinds of bad ideas were getting incorporated into German theology in the late 20th centuries as well.
And so how do we end up with Adolf Hitler and the Holocaust? How does that come about? I mean, bad ideas is one thing. I mean, there are a lot of people in our country with a lot of bad ideas, and ideas have consequences, but they're not going around killing 6 million Jews and as many gypsies as they can get their hands on.
Yeah. Well, again, there's a historical development here is going to take place where you started off with genocide in the colonies, and Germany did have some colonies before World War I. They were stripped of their colonies after they lost World War I. But they committed genocide in Southwest Africa, which is today known as Namibia, and tried to kill the indigenous peoples there, and in fact, interestingly,
what was that all about? Was there a goal to that? To kind of like, well, we're the superior race, and you guys are inferior, and so we want the land, Lebensraum, or whatever that word is.
The, because the Germans were taking away the land and rights of the indigenous peoples, the peoples revolted. And so the Germans decided they were going to decimate the population. And they sent in a general named Trotha, who specifically said that what he was doing was based on Darwinism, struggle for existence, because these were an inferior race, and that they should have every right then as the superior race to exterminate these people if that was necessary and helpful for their own cause. So we have this episode of genocide in carried out by Germans in their colonies early on, and there was continuity between the thinking of that ideas and the notion that inferior races just it's part of the Darwinian struggle for existence, and inferior races deserve to die if they're not of any use to us, and if that we would benefit by taking over their lands and taking over their economic goods and such. And so Hitler was going to imbibe a lot of these bad ideas. Now, World War I was going to be a key pivotal event in German history, which was going to embitter the German people and was going to help Hitler come to power, because he was going to play upon those the bitterness that Germans felt toward the French and the British and the Americans who had won World War I. And so there was this episode. And then also Hitler coming to power, the Great Depression was America's contribution to Nazi Hitler coming to power, because the Great Depression is what really put him on the map politically, because before the Great Depression, he was a small but substantial political party and movement. But the Great Depression was going to launch him into greater power. And here's one of the things that I think is kind of scary in thinking about the way that Hitler came to power too. One of the things that happened in Germany in the 1920s, before Hitler came to power, was that there was an increasing polarization of political parties. Does that sound familiar to us today in the United States? There's this increasing polarization, and one of the ways that Hitler was able to capitalize upon that was by arousing the anti-communist sentiment among peoples of middle classes and to some extent even the working classes, although middle classes. And so this was going to be one way. His arousing the fear of communism was one of the ways he was able to, you know, spread his own brand of radicalism. And so, I think this is very interesting to think about our own political context today too, because the increasing divergence within the American political spectrum, I think, can breed some pretty dangerous things coming our way too. And so I think we need to be careful in our own state that we try to find ways of bringing about greater reconciliation. Although, again, it's becoming increasingly impossible to some degree, because both sides are becoming more radicalized. You know, of course, the left, the progressives on the left, want to blame the right wingers, but in fact, it's the progressives who are pushing some very radical ideas that were unthinkable, you know, 20, 30 years ago, and then they're wondering why there's this backlash against it. And I'm hoping that the backlash won't take the form of something like Hitler, but I think we need to be careful.
Okay, we have 1 minute left. You know what is disturbing about this whole thing is basically you're saying some of the intellectuals in America today essentially discount the premise of the country because they don't agree with the idea that all men are created equal because there's no creator.
Exactly. And it's more prominent on the political left among the progressives, but it's actually becoming fairly common on the political right to some degree too. It's not just in one political party or anything. In fact, in my book Darwinian Racism, I spend a chapter talking about white nationalism, and white nationalism is very secular in its orientation. It tends to be right wing in some ways, although there's some leftist elements in it too. But it's very much following in the train of Hitler and his ideas, and forthrightly so. And building upon Darwinian ideas and ideas of moral relativism and racial superiority and such that we need to make sure we guard against.
All of this discussion reminds me of a poem from Steve Turner, a Christian from England, where he says, history repeats itself. It has to. No one is listening. Dr. Richard Weikart, thanks so much for being with us. Your website is darwintohitler.com. Thank you again. All the best.
Thanks for having me on.